welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott drink an ultra-premium Australian Shiraz from Molly Duker and their Carnival of Love. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome, everybody, to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and on tonight's episode, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver, and we will be drinking the Carnival of Love. I did that specifically, folks, because I knew Scott wanted to sing that.
Carnival of Love.
No. On tonight's episode, we were drinking a wine from Molly Duker. For those that know Australian wines, you probably know Molly Duker. They are the off-kilter, you know, rebels of whatever. They are actually from the genesis was Marquis Phillips. And that winery went asunder. And Sparky Marquis left and started Molly Duker. I remember drinking Marquis Phillips years ago, and their wines were fucking fantastic.
Right.
Molly Duker's always have been good too. But this is up in the line. I believe the top thing they make is the Velvet Glove, which costs like $200. With that, they make Blue Boy or something like that, a Bugle Boy. I don't fucking know. They make Enchanted Path, and they make the Carnival of Love. Carnival of Love is about $95 a bottle. This is, though, the 2011 Carnival of Love, because you don't drink Carnival of Love straight off the bat. You age it. And I remember I bought this, and as a matter of fact, I have two bottles. This is the first of the two, for $50 a bottle back in the day. That's a pretty rare deal. You don't find that normally. And I remember I bought it on wine.com before I was a member. That doesn't mean really shit. Now, the difference between the Carnival of Love and the Enchanted Path, I do believe the Enchanted Path is a blend. This is just Shiraz, and it's from McLaren Valley. So it's, well, McLaren Val, but it's a big,
yeah,
big
Shiraz and Cabernet.
Mm-hmm. Now, previously, for those that don't know, we did this on the show years ago. I don't recall if it aired, but it was years ago. We did a 2005 Carnival of Love.
That was when Princess was on the show, right?
No.
Was that
no,
the Princess Night?
That was with Hank, the Australian Russian, and the superstar, oh, Steve Lord. Gibson. I don't know that show ever made it because Steve passed out literally before the show ended. And Hank had to go home because his wife wondered where he was.
Was that the Stealth Bomber episode?
No, that was Rancho Zumbaco.
But the, and it's Blue-Eyed Boy is the other
Blue-Eyed shows. Boy, yes. So
there's Gigglepot.
Gigglepot. How much is Gigglepot? 70 or something like that?
I'm just...
Because I think Blue-Eyed Boy and Gigglepot are a little bit cheaper than this. And then this is like the... Then Velvet Glove is ridiculously expensive. Like
it's... Let's see. They also have the Scooter.
The Scooter, Fun the Boxer.
Blue Eyed Boy, 60 of your dollars.
60, so it's a little bit cheaper than this.
Yeah. Gigglepot, 60 of your dollars.
Yeah, and Gigglepot is what?
That's the cab.
Okay, Blue Eyed Boy is Shiraz, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And Enchanted Path, Shiraz, cab, Carnival of Love, both those 90 of your American dollars.
Now, where is...
Now, there's the Velvet Glove.
Yes, that's the ultra premium.
220 of your American
dollars. Up your ass with that.
Hey.
Nah, dude. Now, how much... Now, where is Gigglepot and a Blue Eyed Boy?
30.
No, oh. Where are they from?
Good question.
Are they McMarvel?
I think so. Let's find out. Let's go in and look more. I think all their stuff's McLaren Valley.
Is it?
I think. Let's see. Yeah, it's McLaren Valley.
Mm-hmm.
They list about four vineyards: Coppermine Road, Gateway, Long Gully Road, and Molly Duker Home Vineyards in McLaren Valley.
Point out that those that know Coppermine or Coppermine, that is a legendary vineyard. And some of the best wines out of Australia come from there.
Kickle Pot's also from River Lane Vineyard in McLaren Vale.
Yeah, no. Was it Copper Pot or Copper Mine? I can't remember.
You keep making me change pages. Copper Mine Road.
Copper Mine Road, yes.
That's epic. That's classic. That's old school.
That's an elite
legendary
place.
Legendary.
Yeah. So there are a legendary grapes in this wine. And, you know, it is also the Carnival of Love. It has a wonderful motif of, you know, like cosplay kind of theatrical characters from the Renaissance, perhaps. There's a court jester at the top. I like the Carnival. Scott, have you ever been in the Tunnel of Love?
I'm hesitant to answer.
You should be, because there was no good way for you to answer that question.
Yeah,
by Tunnel of Love, what I meant. No.
Yeah, well.
I'm being told not to say what I was going to say, but.
Thank God.
Yeah. Hey, Scott, I've got another pickup line.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Do you like girls, Scott?
Yes,
because,
I like girls.
Oh, because I'm one of those. Apparently, these are pickup lines for lesbians, I'm guessing. I'm thinking, because that wouldn't work too well.
Yeah. Do you read these before you read them?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I am a lesbian. Hey, Scott, fuck me if I'm wrong, but but dinosaurs still exist, right? You see how that works? Yeah.
That's not a pickup line. That's not a desperate line.
Well, yes, that's me, Scott. My other line is, hey, look over there. And then I hit them with a chloroform rag. And then, you know. And a lot of the talk then doesn't matter, I find.
I'm pretty certain that a lot of your talk doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't. It just matters how good of a knot tire you are. That's at that point, yeah.
Fun fact, Wilfred.
What?
Carnival of Love?
Yes.
Aged 100% American oak.
That's fantastic. Well, it's Australian, so it would explain that. There's also spiders that crawl out of the bottle, folks.
Also 100% new American oak, which normally we would go, why?
Well, this wine is not known for its subtlety. Molly Duker is not known for their subtlety either. So, regardless, we're going to take a break.
Alcohol content on the Carnival of Love and the Blue Eyed Boy, 16.5% alcohol. Somewhere the superstar is clapping.
This is 15.5.
Well, I'm just telling you where it is modern.
By the way, I think the 05 was like 16-some, so this is a little bit lighter than that. But regardless, we're going to take a break. But then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. Hey, everybody, it's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back. And we're back, folks. Scott just got done throwing up in his mouth from Rosé of Merlot.
Uttering Merlot Rosé. It's the Serenity line from Molly Duker. Rob got a big smile on his face.
When you threw up in your mouth.
Well, I didn't really throw up.
Oh, can you think about it? Anyway.
They also have Miss Molly, which is a sparkling Shiraz.
Well, folks, if you have a bottle of Carnival of Love and a bottle of The Enchanted Path, if you put the two bottles together, you will see the two labels make a continuous motif about a wonderful love story, which means that you're playing with your bottles of wine. But still, that's fine. You know.
Well, what else do you do when you're down here by yourself when it's not Sunday and we're podcasting? That's when the voices come into his head.
That's when Scott writes all his jokes.
They get trapped. Yeah, I write the jokes when I'm not here with him.
Did you see this? I have The Enchanted Path and Carnival of Love, and they make a continuous love story.
They don't. There's nothing continuous. No.
Can I inform Molly Duker of something? People that spend $95 a bottle of wine do not care about a motif of a continuous love story.
No, it's there's no motif. There's not. There's the.
I don't know. It's what they say. I didn't say it.
No,
it's a continuous love story. That's why.
Yeah, but it's not. You put the bottles together.
Put the bottles together. Put them together.
Jesus.
It says this when you join the Carnival of Love and the Enchanted Path together, the two labels form one beautiful.
Are you becoming me? Did you fall and hit your head?
It says that. I don't know. You have to look closely, Scott.
Yeah.
You don't look closely. You're a dipshit. Apparently.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, this wine does have some critical acclaim. Yes, it does. This is Wilford, and I did not review this wine because I was busy reviewing Oliver wines out of Indiana.
Oliver, Indiana, Oliver, Indiana.
I'm kind of thinking.
Romans, France, or Rome.
I'm kind of thinking that they're trying to, like, push me out. Hey, Wilford, we've got some Indiana wines. I'm thinking, is that relevant to our sales? And they're like, yeah. And I don't think it is, but you know what the blueberry Moscato tasted like?
Lemon?
Blueberries. Oh, yeah.
That's shocking.
Yeah, I didn't have to drink it to know that. So, anyway, the Wine Spectator gave this 94 of their points. And they wrote, dense, deep, and complex, offering a cascade of cherry, blueberry, and clotted cream flavors. I don't know what that means. And a whole range of spices on plush texture.
Well, that's easy for you to
plush
say.
Plush texture. I was burping while I was talking.
That's like a French tapestry? What's tasher?
A plush texture. That's what happens when you vomit while you talk.
Is that your anal prosthetic, Wilfred?
Why does it always have to go to the anus for you?
No, it doesn't.
You're thinking about the tunnel of love, aren't you?
Well,
that's a tunnel of lust, not love. Anyway, this has an arresting, you should know about that, presence and finishes with pizzazz. Does pizzazz have four Z's in it? I don't know.
Anyway, this is James Suckling, and that was ridiculous. And Robert Parker, I didn't review this wine either because it's not Chilean, but Robert Parker did, and he gave it 93 plus. Hmm. And he wrote, or someone wrote, very deep green purple in color. Deep green purple is not a color, Robert, but in color. The 11 Carnival of Love flaunts a very expressive and flagrant nose of floral notes, roses, and potpourri intermingled with toasty black cherries, creme de cassis, chocolate, pepper, and accents of cinnamon and cloves, rich and ripe and full-bodied. This concentrated single vineyard, 100% Shiraz, retains crisp acidity and has a low to medium levels of soft, silky tannins before finishing very harmoniously and long. Drink it from 2014 to 2022 plus.
Mm.
They like their pluses. I like pluses, too. Plus size is lovely. Yes.
Yeah. Of course you do, James.
Big Romy in the hips. Yes. I'm sorry.
How dare you shame people like that?
I wasn't. I find it attractive.
It offends you?
But no,
it
I didn't
offends
say
you, plus it finds
you
attractive.
Offend me. You well, offend me, yes.
Thank God.
I find you to be disgusting. And Wilford informs me that you sell people for money.
I'd like to sell him for money.
He's not worth shit.
Well, there's a problem. I'd just like to get rid of
there
him.
There are some people you could sell him to for money, but it's different because he owes them money.
Pay them to take him.
No,
we could work that out.
Well, that's true. He's worth more dead than alive.
I'm not sure what he's worth at all.
He's worth 17 cents. Actually, it's odd how that it's the exchange rate. I don't know.
Scott, how dare you? Every person has value.
No,
you haven't met Wilfred Wrong.
I don't know what you mean. I'm fantastic.
Mm.
I would, hey Scott, Scott, I wish you were soap so I could feel you all over me. That's another one. I tried that one too. I just now.
Did the self slapping help with the response?
I didn't slap myself on that one. I probably
should have.
I know
you positively should have.
I'm alone and
to
it's,
the wine.
It's sad
to the wine.
I'm gonna go cry.
So, yes, it looks proper in the glass.
You know, I'm a little surprised that it doesn't have a little brickishness about it, and it really doesn't.
Yeah, it shrugged off
all 12 years of its life.
It just said, I don't need to do that. But it makes you think, you know, this wine might have some more life to it.
Oh, it's 22 plus. On the nose.
I mean, there's no...
No, there's no hint of
incident in the glass of brickishness. When you look at this, it looks like a young wine.
It looks like a wine that you just bought and just poured out, and there's nothing unusual about it.
Beautiful legs. The other thing I notice, no tartaric crystalline deposits, so the acidity should have resolved itself.
And good clarity. So one thing you always want to check in a wine is you want to make sure it's not cloudy or anything of that nature, and this wine has good clarity to it.
Which... in an aged wine could indicate some problems.
It could.
On the nose.
Crushed blackberry.
Now on the nose, you know this is an aged bottle of wine. It has a depth. It has the crushed nature of the fruit. It's almost...
vulcanized rubber.
You can almost feel the tanginess of the fruit.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a chalky element there.
And a bit of like white pepper.
Could be. Red cassis. I was going to say rhubarb, but I don't think so. Maybe a little raspberry as well, too. Do you drink it?
It has a port-like quality, although it's not necessarily the port nature when we talk about wines normally. Sometimes... out of port, you get like this caramel aroma to it. This has that thing, almost like a caramel feature in a bourbon, but it's enveloped by all these traditional wine aromas. But in the back there, there's this like caramel thing, and that's wonderful.
Tobacco leaf.
Such a condensed nose. There's so much going on, and none of it's subtle.
But you got to stop and think about each element, and then you'll pull them out. But you smell it, you're like, oh, crushed blackberries. That's the first thing. But then you step back, and you notice the nuances, the different layers that are there. And it's an extremely complex, intricate nose, but you've got to take the time to actually break it down. Otherwise, you'll miss on it.
This wine is exhibiting its specialness before we take a sip.
Yep.
It's a fantastic nose. One of the best noses I remember in a long, long time.
Well, for Australia, it's such a subtle nose. It's almost Bordeaux-esque. Let's go in.
These are the New World Shiraz glasses.
Mm-hmm. It just tastes youthful.
Oh. Nice length. The first thing when it hit my palate, I noticed a thickness about the wine. It's going to sound negative, but it has a syrupy essence about it, tongue coating essence that was dense. Maybe that's a better word. Just it has a, you notice the density of the wine.
I'll tell you what, you take a mouthful, all right, and the mid palate is just like a rain of lovely Shiraz elements. You swallow your pull, and then flavors trickle down of red currant and cherry and raspberry with tinges of oak mixed in there. But it almost is like you're enveloped by it and you just let it trickle down. It's such a unique thing.
I've not experienced something like that that has such an intricate, wildly interesting mid palate like this wine does. I've never seen that before. And the length is exceptional too, but it's just so interesting.
This is wheelhouse for us. Wow. So you've got graphite, you've got tobacco. Is there a tinge of like saddle mm-hmm. leather there? It's like those different expressions of minerality. Oh. But the graphite is amazing to me.
That's a masterpiece.
That's the one that lingers and is always in the background there.
What it does to your mouth when you're just letting those flavors steep. It's hard to describe because you can't. The difference between this wine and, say, earlier we did a Santa Julia Mountain Blend, which we liked a lot. That wine is very direct. Okay, you're gonna swallow it. It's gonna have certain flavors, some richness, and then you're gonna move along your day. This wine doesn't stop. One sip provides so much pleasure, and things to consider, and it just opens your eyes to greater wines. That's what this thing does. Wines of a different cut exist, and this wine is in that. And you see, wow, how could a liquid just made out of grape juice have these many nuances, these many almost like rooms of flavor? So you start off, you're in the front room. Then you go to the parlor. Then you go to the living room. Now you're in the kitchen. Then you go to the bedroom. Then you go to you're almost in, it's compartmentalized of different things.
Yeah.
It's like a fireworks show where you say, oh, boom, 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 then boom, 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 boom.
This wine has different rooms.
Yes.
About it. The astringency of this wine really surprises me. The mouthwashing effect on the finish, it is a big element of the wine for me.
Oh.
I'm kind of having trouble deciding what the star of the show is. There's so much going on.
And the front palate is so decadently elegant. Ripe fruits of raspberry liqueur. Red currant, cherry liqueur. You see where I'm coming with this, folks? Because it has a rich decadence to it. And then it follows in, and that American oak is a wonderful pairing with that kind of decadence. I mean, if you're somebody that drinks Bordeaux all the time, this might be too much for you. But we're you know, chameleons. And so then that oak just, that brings it into that waterfall of flavor. So everything that you just had, that you enjoyed, it's going to waft down and just kind of matriculate on the palate through the mid palate. And then you're going to get pops of tobacco and then the astringency is going to come in mm-hmm. with tannin. Oh, and maybe a little bit of spice and pepper. It's just
Rob's becoming verklempt, folks. While Rob's verklempt, I'm going to give you something to talk about.
Jesus.
Barbra Streisand's wedding. Yeah, that's an old Saturday Night Live joke. But exquisite depth of character. This is a wine with great character, incredible chops for Sarah Marquis. Incredible chops to do this. And
this wine does not taste old either.
How many more years could this have? I don't know. A lot.
10?
5 to 10? Easy, I would say.
The second bottle will not be touched for another few years.
But if you cellar wines, or even if that's not your intent, just buy a bottle of this and don't touch it.
Absolutely.
This has to be in our top 10 recommendations for you're starting a cellar. This bottle has to be in it. It's like a must.
We've had this wine twice.
Participant.
So Scott and I have had this wine twice. A 2005 vintage, and this is like 6 years later. And both times, it was a mesmerizing experience. But this one, as opposed to the 2005, in the 2005, I remember it more almost like Amador Zen overripeness intensity.
Well,
this wine, you know it's Shiraz, but it's intricate. And so it's almost like, you remember the Casa Nuestra?
Yeah.
How it had intricacy.
Oh, God.
This wine has, this is superior to wine, that, but in the same time, though, that's high praise because the Casa Nuestra is really good by Turley.
Well, but, and.
It reminds me a little bit of that, though.
I
like that one.
This does have that Amador-esque kind of thing.
Well, it naturally would because it's the Shiraz, a good Shiraz. Other than, say, St. Henri by Penfolds, which we know is a, and then Grange, and, you can get Stralis, all that other stuff, Runrig by Torbeck, all that kind of stuff can have, take a different picture. And I have actually some stuff from Torbeck, was it Torbeck? It didn't matter. Their Woodcutter. I haven't touched that, and we should drink a bottle of that to see if I like it, but... and I have several Aussie bottles that I've bought that I just don't drink. I don't know why, but Penfold still makes great stuff. I mean, you gotta spend, but
you were a hater there for a little bit.
Well, no, they're
when we started they've been the 28 podcast, very good. Like, Shiraz, Shiraz, Shiraz.
Well, I don't really though love Shiraz. I mean, if we're talking like 12 to 20 bucks, or 10 to 20 bucks, I don't want to drink Shiraz.
No.
Do you?
Do you know anybody,
friends, family, that says, I like to drink Shiraz? I don't know anybody anymore.
I think...
It was popular 20 years ago.
I think, honestly, we openly covet Syrah.
Yes, we do.
Same varietal, but American.
Treated differently, yeah. French, or French.
But treated differently. And let's be honest, this is different than the Washington Syrahs that we covet, we love.
Or California Syrahs.
That we love. But goddamn, son, this is good.
Oh.
This, if you're going to begin a cellar, even if you're just going to put some stuff in your basement, you've got a relatively temperature stable, let's say, crawl space.
Yeah,
and you just a place where you can hide wine where you won't touch it. This needs to be one of the things that you hide and don't touch.
I'm very good at not touching anything because I have stuff that's old. I don't sell wine. I never get the itch. I mean, I've had this for. I mean, I have two bottles. Otherwise, I wouldn't have touched it.
Yeah,
but
this was ready, but it still has time. This was.
Mm-hmm.
Ready, but it still has time. And I think that's a difficult thing for people to know. I struggle with it because there's no, you've got guides for aging wines, but still it's maker dependent and it's a feel.
For me, we'll talk about this on the potpourri. So we're going to take a break, but we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
We'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So in tonight's potpourri, aging wines. How do you know when something's ready? As Scott said, you can refer to the reviews. You can refer to different, you know, written guides. But how do I do it, personally? I had this in the cellar. For instance, the Molly Duca right here. I don't remember. I mean, I knew what it, I think I knew it got a 94. I don't remember the 93. But I don't recall an age, you know, bracket for this wine. And so what I have done is it's been sitting in there in complete. I'm thinking about, did I buy it? I don't know if I brought it over here. I think I bought it when I would have bought this in 2014 or 15, probably. So when we say 12 years, and it wasn't the current release. So I bought this in like 15, because I don't think it ever was moved. So I've had it here for 8 years. And I knew that it was ready, roughly, given the fact of what the wine is and the fact I've had it before. In 2005, we had it in 2017, I think. So about 12 years. This one is about the same. What I do is, I have a general idea. First of all, you have to have a working knowledge of what you have in your cellar. You don't want something to leave, go too long. And I've had that before.
It happens.
You have to be mindful. You have to be mindful of the varietals you have. So if you're predominantly Cabernet, Bordeaux, things of that nature, you're pretty solid. You're not probably going to go past the date unless you have some cheapo, weirdo stuff. But when you intermix Zinfandel, Pinot Noir, Merlot, I put that back in the varietal, put that back in the Bordeaux varietals. You should be safe with that, but assuming that you're not buying cheap Merlot. Tempranillo tends to age well, quite frankly. Sangiovese tends to age well.
Good ones.
But you've got to watch out with certain red blends and some Aussie stuff. So you've got to know what you've got, what the price range is. And when you buy it, you have to, first of all, dedicate yourself to when will you drink it. Think about that. It matters. I look at this and say, on what occasion would I drink this? When would I drink this? I have some stuff. I have some Vase Felix. It's their like a $30 Cabernet. I have a couple bottles of that. It's a 15 or 16 vintage. Haven't touched it. Probably in the next year or two, you will hear a Wine Vault episode where we drink one of those. I just talked about the Woodcutter from Torbeck. I've got to think. That's the 18 vintage. When am I going to drink that? Those things have a little bit more. I think probably on that wine, given the review and the fact that Shiraz, I'm going to hold off on that bottle of wine till 27, 28. So about 4 or 5 years. From now, it's a $20 bottle of wine, but I think it can do it.
Yeah. I think something that's helpful is when your wine producer has recommendations, solid recommendations, that they don't do just for one or two bottles, that they do for everything. We're purveyors of Turley. We've recently started, we've purchased from Carlisle. Really respect them. They give you an idea on aging guidelines for cellaring their wines.
They do.
I think that's brilliant. I think that's a great starting place. And then with personal experience on some of the wines, you get a feel for it. We buy a lot of juvenile and old vine from Turley. It's hard for me to get to their cellaring guidelines because it tends to be gone before they say you should consume it.
Well, what I would say, though,
because it's a $20 bottle of wine.
But have a plan. When you buy something,
I agree.
Think about it. Why are you buying the wine? That's the first reason. Are you buying to hold it back? If you are, what period are you holding it back till?
Market, have a tag, and give the range you're going to drink it in.
I normally, when I buy things to collect, it's things that I want to sit down. It's not something that I want to drink within the next 6 months. I mean, I do have those bottles too, but that's normally what Kirkland is for, quite frankly. I mean, they do a good 6 to 12 month bottles of wine. Or I buy things that are closeouts, or I got a good deal on them. I just bought some Rodney Strong Knights Valley Cabernet from 17. I'm not going to hold that for 20 years. I'm going to drink that in the next 6 to 10 months.
I mean, you could but quote it for a couple of years, but still, it's like that's not the point of why you buy.
Yeah, I just bought some Bordeaux from Vivino. I bought that with the intention of holding that onto that till
for probably 10, 12 years. That's why I bought it.
Yep.
I buy things specifically with the intent of holding them. I don't forget about them. It's just I know what the plan is. And so always remembering when you buy it, what is the intention of why you're buying it?
Yep.
If you're collecting it, why are you collecting it? How long are you going to age it? Or are you just going to jerk off to the fact you got a high review? What are you going to do with this wine? Always a wine when you buy it should have a purpose. You just didn't buy something and say, well, I don't know what the hell I'm buying that for. I mean, I that's why I bought Zara's. I didn't know what to do with that, but then we drank it on the show.
And then we figured it out. But yeah. When you're thinking about cellaring, have a purpose and have a timeline and decide it up front. And, you know, don't be afraid to talk to people and ask questions if you're just getting into cellaring. I think a rule of thumb in general is, let it sit, but don't let it sit too long. Particularly, there's wines you know are cellarable and wines that are questionable.
Well, like this wine. If you bought it in 2015 and drank it in 2018, you're going to miss out.
You are going to miss out because this is a wine that deserves to be aged. One could argue, as much as we like this, it was a little early.
Yeah, it's going to be better in another 3 to 5 years. That's why I have a second bottle. That's the next point.
The two-bottle rule.
Never buy just one.
The two-bottle rule.
If you're spending $200 on a bottle of wine, okay, I get it. I mean, we don't buy duplicates of Pichon Baron.
We don't have that kind of money.
No.
But maybe you do. Maybe you do. Stick to the two-bottle rule. Some people would say six bottles.
Well,
some people would say six bottles.
I mean, depending on what your finances are.
The point is...
But if I'm buying their second label, I'm buying three bottles, but unfortunately, the purveyor that I bought it from, I bought them out, and they all had only had two bottles, so they sent me two, but they've charged me for three. But Vivino
is going to make it good. A sad thing is when you have this extraordinary wine, and you drink it, and you go,
oh,
God damn, I wish I had another bottle of that.
It's happened too many times.
And you don't. The two-bottle rule is something we talked about on the show many, many years ago. And I both Rob and I, we try to live by it, but we don't.
No.
We're not buying two of everything. Mm-hmm. When you bought those Bordeaux, you didn't buy two of everything.
Which one?
That last little thing you bought from Vivino.
Yes, I did.
You got two of everything?
I actually ordered three, but only two came.
How dare you?
And I bought...
I thought you bought, like... two others that you only got singles of.
Yeah, because I didn't give a shit about those. But
well, see?
See
maybe
what?
Those will be special bottles. And you'll go, God damn.
Probably not.
We'll see.
I mean, some...
Time will tell.
Pure Latour. I'm not buying... I'm just buying one of those. I know I can get more. But, you know, I wish I... Well, if I'm going back, I remember I bought a bottle of Pone Cane. The, what was it, 2002 Pone Cane. I bought it for $42, folks.
Oh, my God.
And I bought one bottle.
So good.
And now it's $180 a bottle. But I bought one bottle at $42.
When, granted, that was a lot of money for you then.
Yeah, but I still could have bought two.
You know, you didn't have the means you do now.
Yeah, I still
could
have bought two.
But it's, there's a lesson to be learned. Cellaring, have a plan. And listen, there's plenty of sources you can go to get assistance online. And there are people you can reach out to, and they'll answer your questions. Don't ask us. We're fucking dumb fucks. We don't know. But Rob would be glad to answer your questions on cellaring. But it's like...
I answer those questions sometimes.
You can
reach out to us on Facebook.
But. Reach out to people who will give you their opinion, and then you gather the information, you make the best choice. But you buy tags and you mark your bottles.
Folks,
this is intended to be drank in 2035 through 2040.
Look up the Wine Vault podcast on Facebook. If you can reach us directly through MSN or Facebook Messenger, you reach out, I'm going to answer. I'm going to give you my opinion. And we've had some listeners do that before many times.
Yep.
And I've had some wonderful conversations with some great people and given them some ideas and different places, different things to try.
But it's like...
And you're more than welcome to.
This
folks, it doesn't cost them a dollar. I'm more than happy to chat with you and give you some ideas.
Yeah, but this bottle for me is classic. Needs to be included in your cellar. This and Saint Henri, Penfold Saint Henri.
Yeah. If you can, Saint Henri. I bought a bottle
if
recently.
You can get it.
Yeah. Well, no, you can normally find it someplace. But it's in the low 100s. But it's a classic. Different style than this.
A little more austere.
Well, it's a little more French in its approach. So
100%. Yeah. Where this is more classic.
Yeah. It reminds you more of a Northern Rhone in style Syrah.
Where the Molly Duker's more Australian, a little more in your face.
But that's fine. That's fun. I mean, it can be. When it's done right, Aussie Shiraz are great.
This is
so often not.
Such next level. Amazing. I can't think of somebody who's treated a premium wine as well as they have with 100% American oak, 100% new American oak.
Yes.
And gotten this result.
No, Lord.
It's such.
Nobody has.
An exquisite.
Well, somebody has.
Oaking experience. I'm sure somebody has. I don't know what they are. And normally, if I would have said that, I'd have been like, wait, American oak, 100% new? Really? I'd have been like, you're going to do that to this wine? And they did, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. The oak treatment of this wine, again, earlier I said, I don't know what the start of the show is. It's so hard to define what the start of the show is because everything's so well incorporated. Everything's so integral. Everything is just so perfectly balanced. And this is 100% new American oak. It's a shocking. I'll be honest, I'm shocked.
Well, folks, I sat there and thought while Scott was talking for about 25 seconds trying to remember what the premise of the potpourri was. And I remembered it was about aging.
Well, there you go.
It's the second bottle. What do you want? Anyway, that is that's the fun part about wine. Everybody likes to drink and we like to have a good time and we love the flavors and whatnot. But really the enjoyment in wine is the long-term patience of it. If you have the patience, if you're willing to give the time to let the bottle mature, the right bottles, mind you, there's a lot of things that you can have a special experience. And we can't really articulate that. You're going to have to take the time, take the risks to do that yourself. Hey, if you put some bottles back, you can always buy more things to drink in the meantime. You don't have to. Those things are off limits. That you can have, this is what I drink. This is what I hold. And I don't touch this. It's called discipline. You can have that even if you drink a lot. There's no way I'm going to go back and pull a Lynch Bosch because we've been drinking. That's never going to happen. I can never be that drunk. It never would happen. I would pass out before I would do that. It never would happen. And so that is there for when I am, you know, I don't know how old I'll be. You'll be dead, so it won't make a difference.
Well, yeah, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Pretty sure.
Old people in my family, 90s plus is regular. So well, I got till next year.
You'll have a colostomy bag probably by then. But,
you know. But the point is, you can age wine. It needs to be temperature stable. Don't have to have this super incredible temperature controlled environment. You can have swings in temperature. It just needs to be relatively stable. As important as temperature is humidity. Chances are, wherever you're at in the United States, you've got a basement, you can manage something.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be enclosed? Probably. Can you buy an expensive temperature-controlled system? Yes, you can.
Is that necessary?
Is it necessary? No, but maybe it's useful. Maybe it's something you want to commit to. You know, a couple hundred bottle temperature controlled refrigerator unit for your wine. Why not? If you have the means to do that, why not?
Well, sure.
It's an easy way of doing it. Rob has a wonderful basement area and he's a simple system. I built a nice storage area mine's not perfect. His is better for temperature. My humidity's fine. I'm not buying ultra-sensitive Pinots from Burgundy. I don't have that kind of coin.
I have one.
Then my temperature would be more important.
Yes, that's true. There are wines that are a little more sensitive to fluctuations. Like Scott said, if you're going to be aging Burgundy, Pinot, long-term, or, well, hell no, we have first growth. We have expensive Bordeaux. Bordeaux is a little more robust. I know that I can age Bordeaux long-term because I have. And so I know what I have now is going to age perfectly where it is because I've already done it. This facility that I have does it. I don't need anything better than what I've got because it can do it. But yeah, Scott's right. If you have things, if you're going to be doing high-end Burgundy, spending $200 to $400 on a bottle of Burgundy, you need to be a little more because you need consistency. But nevertheless, we're going to take a break. But then we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault. And we're back, folks. So the 2011 Molly Duker Carnival of Love from Australia, Scott. What is your numerical score for this fine, fine wine? I haven't even thought about numbers. I've been in rapture, if that's the correct term. Scott went off because he had to go make a boom boom in the potty.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I had to write a note.
Scott, I don't need to know about your bodily functions.
I had to go now.
We had to end the potpourri. Too bad there wasn't a glass table. Give me a hot girl.
Jesus.
Blumpkin. That's what that is.
We have a buddy named Hot Carl.
Hot Carl. You know, you never respect a man named Carl.
Hot Carl.
Rob the wine guy's... sister-in-law dated a man named Carl once for like 15 minutes because she's married now, but everybody else she dated about 15 minutes. And one man's name was Carl. Rob the wine guy called him Hot Carl. Never met him, mind
you. He was not Hot Carl, though.
I doubt it. He was like worked at a grocery store in Kentucky.
Rob's playing the guitar in his spare time.
So you do the math there, but still, you know. Anyway. Nevertheless, Scott, what is your numerical score for this wine?
Rarely do we do an aged wine. And am I going to give a score based on its future potential? But this falls into that. This is a 2011 mm-hmm. that we're drinking now in 2023, and I'm giving it 95 of my points because of its future ageability.
It has that, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Mm. Look, when you're in the 94, 95, 96 range, to be fair, we're a little bit out. I'm perfectly comfortable rating this wine, but you know, do I have an expertise at rating 95 and 96 wines? We don't often get the opportunity to do that.
We don't drink Fetzer that often, do we?
Nobody's giving us these caliber wines for us to taste.
Fetzer.
This is from Rob's private stock. When we do a special wine, it's our special wine, whether he bought it, I bought it, whoever bought it.
True.
Somebody bought it for
true.
Us.
True, that's very true.
But this is that level wine. Is it a 94, 95, and 96? I'm going 95 because of the future ageability. It's an incredibly complex expression of elite Shiraz from an elite producer. 15 different components we picked out. One of the best, most complex, condensed noses. So often when we talk about aromas in a wine, it's everything subtle. Not in this. It's like these condensed aromas that you have to really, I think Rob used the word focus on to pick out the different ones, but they're there. I use the comparison to port or bourbon of the caramel notes on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
In the glass, the expression of oak. I don't think we talked about enough the tannic structure. I don't think we talked about it enough. This is a tannic son of a bitch.
It is.
It's classic Australian style, in your face Shiraz that has aged for 12 years.
Yeah.
That has 5 to 10 more to go. And
it does.
Every sip of this is a biblical experience. 95 of my points.
I will give it 96 of my points. Just one more point higher.
You had no idea what you were going to give it. You just decided, I'm going to give it a point more than Scott.
No, it's 94, 96. But the reason why is, the fact is, it already is exceptional. It is for Australian style Shirazes, this is the pinnacle that we have had. And we've had the 2005. We liked that. That was an amazing wine. I still remember that. So, I mean, how many years later? 5, 6. But this wine is more intricate, more complex than that wine. That wine was more of a sledgehammer. This wine is intricate and interesting. And it doesn't show a day of age. It doesn't show any age, and it's 12 years old, not a day of age. This could be as fresh as, it could be a 2021 vintage, as far as we know. Those things are mesmerizingly impressive to me. And besides the fact, I think the wine, it has rooms of flavor, as we said earlier on, and you don't see that. You just don't.
It's just so unique.
It is. It's a triumph of winemaking. It's a triumph of the grape stock that they have. It's just, it for under $100, you're not going to get something really that has the ageability and, quite frankly, the je ne sais quoi that this wine has.
Right.
So, 96 of my points, Hall of Fame. On the shelf, I got to figure out who's Chateau Grazon is getting knocked off there. But
I think we may need to build another shelf.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, I'm looking at poster space on the wall that feels
I know.
When was the last time you had Great Lakes Brewing Dortmunder Gold? I mean, look, it's a really good beer.
I don't know when I've had that.
Yeah, I think we need to invest in some shelf. I've got shelf material.
So do I. This wine is beloved. Tip of the cap. Bravo to Molly Duker. And quite frankly, I remember back with Marquise Phillips, those wines. I remember we were at Greg Norman's, remember his restaurant in Myrtle Beach?
It's closed now, I think.
Thank God. But years ago, and I'm talking 2010, it was really good. You know, it stopped being really good where they couldn't cook a steak to save their life. But back in 2010, it was good. And myself and my soon-to-be ex-brother-in-law had a bottle of Marquise Phillips Shiraz with our dinner, and it was magnificent. So Tip of the cap, bravo. Bravo to us, because we're great. But nevertheless, for Rob
They're still open. Barefoot Landing. They're Greg Norman, Australian Grills, still open.
I'm not going there. But
God, even their opening page on their website, that steak doesn't look that good.
It was good 13 years ago. It's not good now. So for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Licensed Taxi Driver, we will bid you adieu. But we will see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.